The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition. We're on today's show. We're got double remote, as we've got both Jim and Bob calling into the studio here. I am in the studio alone, I must say, so I am practicing social distancing, but somebody's got to run the board and the phone lines and everything, so I got elected. I'm in here, and Jim is at his residence, I believe, and Bob is somewhere out in the wilderness, but on his cell phone. And hopefully they can both still hear me. You guys still connected?
Jim is connected.
Bob is connected from his house. No wilderness, just from the house.
Well, it sounded more exciting to imagine you out somewhere. But okay.
I'm in a tent somewhere on the top of the mountain.
So Bob's at his house. And Bob's on the show, obviously. Whenever we hear Bob's voice, that means we must have some sort of tax question involved. So I haven't seen the questions because, again, Jim is the one who usually picks the pile of questions, and he's not in the studio today. So I'll be as surprised as you are, but I know we've got at least one tax question. So who's on deck to read the question so we can start discussion?
That would most likely be me. I will read the question. Perfect. And Bob is our resident CPA. And you relaxed a little bit now, Bob. That's April 15th almost here, plus the delay till July 15th. Or are you still going crazy?
Still going a little crazy. The deadline or the extension is nice. But people that bring in their taxes, you know, they still get interested in finding out where they are and if they're going to get a refund. And so there's still a little pressure.
Okay, well, you got a week left of that. And then hopefully lightened up a little. But that means everything that you're putting off is just going to come due in the summer when everyone is supposed to be enjoying themselves. Hopefully we're not still under house arrest in the summer. And you're going to be stuck doing taxes.
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing that up, because I didn't think about that, Jim, so thank you.
You won't be able to come out and play with everyone. You'll have homework. All right, well, this email came in. It was kind of tax-related and planning-related as well, so I think both Bob and Chris and myself can help this gentleman. So let's begin with this question. He signs his email George, and he is from... Well, he doesn't really say where he's from. But anyway.
He says Minnesota.
Oh, doesn't? He says it in here? All right.
Yeah.
Oh, we have a Minnesotan.
Bob.
All right. It begins, "Hello, Jim and Chris." And I'm sure he would have included you, Bob, had he thought of you. But Hello, Jim and Chris, and I'll throw in and Bob. I really love the show. I listen to the podcast every Saturday morning and have learned a ton, including that my name is now George. So, yes, his name is now George. He gave his real name at the top, and we will protect his anonymity and call him George. He says, seriously, your theory makes a lot of sense to me. I'm 52, so I have plenty of working years ahead of me, but I like the approach you take. I'm not an NFL fan, therefore I'm not a Pats fan, but I have ran the Boston Marathon 4 times. Wow, guy's in shape. 4 times and was supposed to run it again in April, but it got postponed. So I will say go Pats. So at least he's a Pats fan, even though he's not a football fan. He has rooted on my little Brady-less Pats, which I'm not going to be too excited about this year, but that's a whole other story. I ran the race in 2013, the year of the bombing, and the year after that, too, and I have come to love Boston and its people. Boston is resilient, and in these turbulent times, resilience is what we need. During all this recent market upheaval, if not a crash, one thing has kept me going, and that is the opportunity to do a Roth conversion. I hope he has more to live for than just doing Roth conversions. But one thing that kept him going is the opportunity to do Roth conversions. At the market peak, I had just cracked $1 million in retirement savings. But I only have $50,000 in a Roth IRA. Let me pause there, folks, for a minute and just bring you up to date again on a concept and theory that Chris and I have, and now Bob has as someone who has been working with us for a while now. And that is tax diversification. When you're saving for retirement, you want to give the retired you all the flexibility possible by having some of your money in always taxable accounts. Those would be IRAs and 401ks and TSPs, distributions that for the most part will always be taxable. The financial planning industry or the investment industry terms those accounts qualified accounts for a variety of reasons, but they call them qualified accounts. But you're also going to want to have money in what we call maybe taxable accounts. You may pay taxes on them. You may not pay taxes on distributions from them. Those are usually bank and brokerage accounts. And the taxes that you would owe, if any, are going to be tied to capital gains tax rules, as well as your tax brackets and the taxation perhaps of other items that are floating around in your tax calculations. Bob, is there anything you want to add on a maybe taxable account?
I think that covered it pretty well, other than maybe taxable also means maybe taxable regular rates, maybe taxable capital gain rates, capital gains, qualified dividends, long-term capital gains all are taxed at either 0, 15, or 20%. So when we look at an always taxable account, a sometimes taxable account, it can have different types of tax in that account.
And it could be 100% tax-free if things go well. So that's why we call them maybe taxable. And then you have never taxable accounts, folks. Those are the Roths. This is what this gentleman is writing in about. This is what keeps him going in these dark times right now is his ability to do Roth conversions because he's recognized with $1 million of assets in always taxable accounts and only $50,000 in never taxable accounts, he does not have what we call good tax diversification. Would you agree, Chris, or disagree?
He's actually fairly typical these days because he's behaved like most people have been trained or encouraged over the past few decades, which is to stuff as much money avoiding taxes along the way as possible, stuffing money into these retirement accounts. But the tax man will come to roost again at 72 and beyond, in particular when RMDs start. So sometimes you're creating more of a tax nightmare, might be an extreme word, but a tax concern or tax burden for yourself later in life than you intended when you don't have this kind of diversification. But we actually see lots of people that come to us and their assets are vast majority reside within these always taxable accounts. So I applaud him in wanting to try to address that. He's only 52 now, so maybe he's got a good 10, 15 years to try to create some flexibility for himself that then will present him with the opportunity to make decisions strategically to reduce his taxes later on. So, this is pretty typical and definitely a lack of tax diversification currently.
Okay. So he continues his email. Could you please outline the considerations for doing Roth conversions, particularly for someone in his 50s? In my case, my joint gross income with my wife is about $160,000 a year. So our federal tax rate is 22%. And I live in a high-tax state of Minnesota. There's the Minnesota reference, Bob, so you're right, Minnesota. My main question is this. I know I will pay 22%, if not 24%, on any amounts I convert. And I have brokerage accounts that I can tap to pay the income taxes I will owe. But when I do conversions, what should I be thinking about? How much should I transfer over? Are there hidden pitfalls for someone my age? I am a long way from Medicare, so I don't believe there should be any concerns there, but are there other potential pitfalls and concerns? Will the amount I convert affect my ability to contribute to a Roth IRA? Any tips on which funds or stocks I should be converting? This morning, I converted three very low-performing stocks I have in my IRA, ones that I have already lost a ton of money on, and that basically should go nowhere but up. The vast majority of my money is in Vanguard funds. No surprise there, is there, Chris?
No, that's the other common thing. Lots of people that contact us. I guess it just proves why Vanguard or supports the fact that Vanguard has so many assets in-house. They custodian the vast, not the vast majority, but a huge amount of assets within our economy. And we see that when we see comments like that. So many people contacting us that turn out to have Vanguard funds.
So already, folks, if you follow what he's doing, he's converted some stocks. He has some stocks at Vanguard, even though the vast majority of his money is in Vanguard funds. He converted three stocks, underperforming stocks, that he said have lost a lot of money, so they're down a lot, and in his opinion, have nowhere to go but up. Now, that I don't know. When it comes to individual stocks, they could continue to go down. They don't necessarily have to turn and go up. But nonetheless, he feels they have nowhere to go but up. So he converted those first. One thing to keep in mind as Bob answers this question and Chris opines and answers this question and I add a little bit as need be, one thing to keep in mind, you are converting shares, not dollars. The government will tax you on dollars, but you're converting shares. And the government doesn't tax you at what those shares were once worth or what they might someday be worth. They're going to tax you on what they're worth on the day you convert. So if he had 1,000 shares of something that used to trade for $10 a share, that's $10,000. But if it's only worth $5 a share now, the government's not going to say, oh, you still got to pay taxes on the 10 it once was. He's going to get the same 1,000 shares converted for just $5,000 of taxable income if his stocks had dropped 50%. So that effectively cuts the taxes he would owe on a conversion by half. It's not quite half. Bob will tell you that. The money gets taxed differently when it gets put into your taxable income. But let's just keep this simple. He effectively cut his taxes by 50% because he got the same amount of shares converted that he would have converted maybe last year before the market tanked. So now's a prime opportunity, and I will say, Bob and Chris, I like the fact that he singled out three of his individual stocks that he feels are going to come back and have already lost a lot. So to me, he converted the appropriate assets. But he asks, is there anything else he should take into account? Is there anything that can come bite him in the hiney as he does these conversions? Are there any things to watch out for? And will these conversions prevent him from perhaps being able to do future conversions? Excuse me, contributions to the Roth? Will the income that's being converted hurt him with his ability to do a contribution to the Roth? Remember, he makes $160,000. He's only 43 or so thousand away. Chris, if you can Google it, if you get there, what is the 2020 phase out range for a married couple on the Roth conversions? So
it's $196,000, Jim.
But that's not
Bob.
that is Bob, but I thought that, is that for a married couple, Bob?
Yes, $196,000 to $206,000.
That's the number I wanted, $206,000. Yeah. So above $206,000, he cannot convert. You said between $96,000 and $206,000?
$196,000
and $206,000. Between that, listeners, he'll be able to do he may not be able to contribute. Above 206, he cannot contribute. Between 196 and 206, him and his wife will be able to contribute, but the contributions will be reduced. So if you go over the 206, listener, you've got $46,000. You go over that, you might run into some trouble. So he just wants us to opine a little bit on all of that. Bob, I'll open up the phone line to you, and then Chris, you can share what you would like.
Okay.
What I would, I guess, add to that, Jim, on the ability to do the Roth conversion, yes, 196 to 206 is a phase out. He can
not conversions, contributions.
Excuse me. Yes, contributions. I think you said that earlier, and you got me stuck on it. but you can always do a non-deductible IRA contribution for the same amount, $7,000 each if you're over 50. There's no income limit on that. And then you could then do a Roth conversion of the contribution, also known as a backdoor Roth. And so you could still effectively do a Roth conversion, I think, a Roth contribution, even if you did a Roth conversion that pushed your AGI above those limits. Do you agree with that?
With a kind of a qualifier, which is the back door really only works effectively if you have no traditional IRA balances, because you're going to run into the pro rata rule on the subsequent conversion. So, yes, for people who are over the 206 and have no traditional IRA balance, they can effectively still get the $7,000, if they're over 50, into the Roth as a contribution by doing it through the back door. But if they've got traditional IRA money, there's the pro rata thing to worry about. So with that one qualifier, yes, you are absolutely correct. That would be an alternative to it. I'm not, if people are doing big conversions, that's actually a way to get a lot of money in a Roth, and that might be preferable than worrying about a $7,000 one-time contribution. So you might still want to do it even if you eliminate your ability to do a contribution that year. But always remember that any contributions you miss because you're not allowed to make them can't be made up later. You essentially have these, you know, yearly, no do-over, no retroactive claiming, none of that kind of stuff on these contributions. Once you miss the window that opened for a yearly contribution, you cannot take advantage of it in the future. So that's one thing to, that's why we're so sensitive about giving up the ability to make a contribution. But in the grand scheme of things, it may or may not be significant for an individual. But be aware that you will undermine your ability to make a direct contribution if you're over that $206,000 of modified AGI, of MAGI. Yeah, you can certainly do the backdoor if you have empty traditional IRAs.
So for him, he's got a large traditional IRA and in the 22% bracket.
If I can interrupt one thing, Chris, I don't know, but Bob is all broken up on my end.
Started that. His cell phone is breaking up just a little bit. But
yeah, okay. Bob, if you can move
better?
Somewhere with a better signal,
it's
that would
better
be.
Now.
Okay. No, let me know if that happens again.
Okay. That sounds good.
Okay, good. So going back to his rate for looking at a Roth conversion for this year, he says gross income of about $160,000, and we don't know if he's itemizing or taking the standard deduction, but only about 15% of the people now do itemize, so making the assumption of about a 24 and a little bit standard deduction. It brings his taxable income down to 136, and the top of the 22% bracket currently is 171. So he has the ability to do, you know, about 35,000 at the 22% bracket, and then he's going to go into the 24% bracket, and he's got lots of room there. That goes up to 326,000. So there's plenty of room. In a little bit of room in the 22 and a lot of room in the 24, which, you know, part of the consideration is where brackets might go, where you might end up. You know, he's, you know, a number of years away from retirement, so it's kind of hard, you know, it's hard to know, look out that far, but we know in 2026, those brackets will be at least back to 25% if things go back to where they were as the current plan is. So either of those brackets right now would be a little bit ahead of where they might go and where he might be. But there's a lot of considerations into other types of retirement income that he might have and where those brackets might be. So there's a lot of planning to look at, but the brackets by themselves, and you know, can be kind of favorable to move some dollars over into those into a Roth IRA to even out his asset allocation before he retires. Another consideration would be state taxes. You know, he's in Minnesota. So, you know, if you plans on retiring in Minnesota, that's kind of apples to apples. If you retire in a tax-friendly state or a no-tax state, just something to consider, would you save down the road on state taxes? And is that a big enough difference to factor in?
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people do consider retiring to a lower tax state, so that can affect some people's plans. Don't forget the state part. People always focus on the federal part, but certainly if you're going to move from one state to another and have a different tax system, different tax rates, that will definitely or should definitely affect your decision on making conversions now in your current status. Might, in his case, Minnesota's a relatively high tax state. So it might, if he does have any plans to move, that might be a factor for him to consider. I'll also throw out, maybe it's on your list already, Bob, and I just didn't give you a chance to get to it, but if there's events like the CARES Act, that can come back to bite you a little bit. You know, right now, if your 2018 married filing joint AGI was over 150, they start to reduce the payments that you're going to be receiving. So if in, say the same scenario continues on next year or the year after, you may have made a decision to do these, increasing your AGI, your adjusted gross income, and cause you not to receive some of those credits, which is kind of the same story as any phase out of any types of deductions or credits that you might be eligible to receive. You need to be worried about those too. It's not just the tax rate. There are other tax consequences or even weird situations like the CARES Act credits that are going out, payments that are going out, that could also be affected by you recognizing additional income in a given year through a conversion.
Yeah, those are good points, Chris. And those are some of the things that you do have to kind of take into consideration. He doesn't mention a lot of investment income, interest, dividends, royalties, rental income. But a married filing couple, when they approach $250,000 a year, investment income above that amount starts getting hit with the 3.8% NIT surcharge. So, again, when you're planning to do these and you're looking at how much should I do, there's various thresholds of things you're going to lose, some things are going to cost a little bit more. Overall, can still be some good ideas, good planning strategies, but a lot to consider before you just make that decision to go ahead and do that. And another thing I'll point out is because of his age being under 59 and a half, he's going to want to make sure, which is a good idea anyway, when you do the conversion, you want to pay your taxes with bank or broker or the sometimes taxable accounts, because it makes the effectiveness of the Roth conversion better for you. Rate, when you compare the rates of return, you're going to come out better paying those taxes with outside money. But if you don't do that, you could subject yourself to the 10% penalty on the tax portion.
Right. So if you take a distribution out to pay the taxes on the conversion and you're under 59 and a half, it won't be a qualified distribution, and you've got these the early distribution penalty on top of there. So also a good point that definitely better, because effectively what that does is it ends up adding to your overall tax burden, could completely undermine that extra 10% penalty, could completely undermine the advantages of doing the conversion now. If you're doing it mainly to convert at lower rates to avoid higher rates later, add on that 10% and that might kind of squash the whole deal as far as an intelligent approach to your tax situation.
Yeah, no, I agree. So while these are good planning opportunities, especially right now with what's happened in the markets and his circumstances, he's picked a few that he thinks are at their bottom, and the recovery will, of course, come back in these tax-free accounts. So a great planning opportunity, but one that has to be thought out carefully with what's going on now and with what you think will be going on in the future with your tax planning.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to add on all that?
I think sometimes people dismiss conversions because they think the taxes are going to be too close. So they're saying, it's too close. It's not really worth doing. Even if it's close, I think it's worth considering for someone who has a lack of tax diversification. We see so often, once people get into retirement, we are like, boy, if they had a little more diversification, we could do this, we could do that, we could move recognition of income a year so that they could qualify for ACA premium tax credits or avoid something, or there's so many benefits that can come out of flexibility that even if you think it's going to be close to a wash, converting now compared to later. Don't let that be the only thing you consider. Having the flexibility of tax diversification, having money in always taxable, maybe taxable, and never taxable. And honestly, if you had, you know, always and never and none of the maybe, that's still pretty good tax diversification. But having that flexibility there can really help. So don't, again, dismiss it thinking, oh, you know, in the future I'm predicting 24%. Now I could do it at I'm predicting 25 in the future. I could do 24 now. That's so close, it's not worth doing. Don't forget about setting yourself up to be flexible in the future that you don't know exactly what it's going to look like. That's the benefit of the flexibility from diversification.
Okay. Is that my cue to pipe in?
I think so. Unless Bob has anything else to tag.
No. Yeah, Jim, pipe in. Let's hear what you got to say.
Well, no, no. I let you guys run with this, and in the meantime, I was looking through emails to get some more emails to answer.
Oh, you were ignoring us during this whole conversation. That's why it was so quiet.
That's why it was so quiet. I mean, you should be happy. I thought you guys could do that. I will say on your end, Chris, because I know my phone is not the best in the world, Bob is very hard to understand. Can you hear him okay?
I can, which is where the recording's happening, so I think it'll be good on this end.
Okay, as long as it's good on this end, then in that case, Bob, you're welcome to stay on for the rest of these questions. Some of them are tax-related-ish, and you might be able to opine a little. But if you feel he's not coming in clearly, Chris, then we don't want to annoy our listeners. There's nothing worse than listening to someone that's all broken up. But if you can hear him fine, that's what matters, I suppose, because that's where the recording is taking place.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's certainly understandable. Sounds like a cell phone, so it's fine.
Okay. All right. Well, we got some other questions. Bob, are you going to stay on, or are you going to go off?
I'll probably stay on for a little bit, and I'm kind of curious what these other questions are about. So as long as the sound quality is at least good enough, I'll hang on for a little bit.
Okay. And we do apologize, folks, for the lack of sound quality, as Bob put it, on the podcast for the past month. But we are staying apart from each other, so we're calling in remotely. Only Chris is in the office, and he's upstairs polluting the whole upstairs with his you don't have coronavirus, do you, Chris?
You know, I guess nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
I could be spreading it all over the place.
You feel you're doomed, you say, because of all the kids going in and out of your house.
Well, they're mostly stuck inside, but they certainly were out gathering virus particles prior to the lockdown. So,
well, the governor, he said he's going to lift it, what, the 26th of April now?
Yeah, if everything keeps going well, that's still 19 days away. So,
yeah, okay. All right, well, we've got a couple of other questions I want to get to. And let's begin with this one's a pretty good one, Chris, because the guy, let me read it to you.
Okay.
To Mr. Saulnier and or Mr. Stein. So
formal.
Very formal. I am a 38-year-old, and as I build my startup, I am currently unemployed. I have never been married. The last time, and you're going to have to follow along with everything he's going to be saying now, folks, and Chris and Bob. So he says, the last time I earned any wages was November of 2018. Through 2019, I collected unemployment benefits only. So in November 2018, he lost his job. He started collecting unemployment in 2019. Mm-hmm. In December of 2019, I opened two Roth IRAs because I was told by three bank brokers that I am eligible to make contributions to a Roth IRA in 2019 because I have taxable income.
Mm.
Yes, exactly. Here,
that's a perfect sound effect.
It's not taxable income, folks. Right. It's earned income. And even though unemployment benefits are taxed as income, they do not count at all for making IRA contributions.
Right.
So he continues. Taxable income. In December of last year, so just a few months ago, I made contributions, again, for 2019, totaling, it wasn't much money, folks. Remember, he's starting a startup, $500 in both my Roth IRAs. However, after listening to your show a couple of days ago, I found out that I'm, in fact, not eligible to make contributions to my Roth IRA in 2019 because my income was not earned. I intend to do my taxes in the next 3 weeks, and my questions are this. Now, hopefully, he didn't do his taxes because he sent us this right at the end of February, beginning of March. And I'm not answering this until the beginning of April, so hopefully he didn't do his taxes yet. My questions are, number one, is there any way I can somehow change my contribution I made in 2019 and call it a 2018 contribution since I did make income in 2018? Do either one of you want to answer that no question?
That no question? that's a hard no from everyone on that one. So you can't,
Bob,
you don't
you
have
agree.
To win.
Yeah. Yes, and when did he? Oh, so he did not make that contribution until December, correct?
Right. He made the contribution in December of 2019 on the advice of three brokers who worked for a bank.
Yeah. So. Well past any deadline for 2018.
Yes, well past. If he had made it earlier in the year, he could have recharacterized it as a 2008 contribution, 2018 contribution, absolutely. If it was done before April 15th of last year, he could have recharacterized it, but not in December. So there's no way, listener, you can call a December 2019 contribution to be a December 2018 contribution. Not going to happen. Okay, if I can't do number one, my biggest concern will be avoiding taxes on the gains that I will incur in the future. Would it be best for me to withdraw the funds from my Roth IRAs and pay the 10% penalty to the IRS? Or is there another solution that would cost me less than the $50? Well, I got some good news for you, listener. You're not going to be hit with a 10% penalty.
Nope.
The money you put into a Roth is after-tax money, listener. Your contributions can come out at any time for any reason, no taxes, no penalties. So even though you weren't, even though you weren't allowed to contribute to the Roth, you did not deduct them on your taxes because you're not allowed to deduct Roth contributions. Even though you weren't allowed to make a Roth contribution, you thought you were. So you weren't allowed to deduct it. It's after-tax dollars in. You will be able to remove that Roth contribution, which you weren't allowed to do, and you're not going to have to pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty on it. However, if you withdraw earnings, and I don't know how much earnings you have on $500 that you put into two Roth IRAs, so I'm assuming it's $1,000 total. I'm also guessing that the $500 was the minimum amount you needed to open up the Roths. Why you opened two, I don't know. But I'm also guessing because there's such a small dollar amount, you probably paid a commission, not that there's anything wrong with that, but you probably paid a commission to these bank brokers who gave you a bad advice. So between the commission you paid and the fact that the market's down, I think it's a pretty good chance, Chris and Bob, he has less than $500 in there today.
Certainly but possible, unknown, though.
No, it's unknown, but highly likely. So if you are going to be withdrawing out less, and it's not a withdrawal, listen, you don't close the Roth. You have to close it, yes, and you're going to take out, and it's a removal of an excess contribution. That's how it's got to be coded by your custodian. You're going to tell them, I need to remove an excess contribution. The rules say you must remove the excess contribution plus any earnings minus any losses. That's what you have to remove. So if you now have just $400 in there, you've got to remove $400, which effectively undoes a $500 excess contribution.
Yep.
And you will not have to pay a 10% penalty removing that money. Now, if it grew, maybe the bank brokers didn't give you very good tax advice, but maybe they were brilliant on investments. And that $500 in each Roth grew to $600, even with the coronavirus correction. Then you would have to pay taxes and a 10% penalty on the $100 gain. And because you still don't have any earned income, you wouldn't be able to, you wouldn't be able to recharacterize that anyways. Mm-hmm. Never mind, I'm not even going to go down that road. No. My brain was thinking faster than my mouth could correct it. So don't even pay attention to that. You've got to take that money out before October 15th. If you do it before October 15th, you are all set. And I think, Chris, is there, if he does it before October 15th, is there no 10% penalty if he does it before October 15th? Or am I wrong on that?
There, at his age, I think there's going to be the 10% penalty. Hopefully his tax situation is so lean that he may very well not owe taxes on it. He'll have to record it as income. But in this case, the good news is he was thinking he was going to have to pay a 10% penalty on the whole $500. He's only going to have to pay a 10% penalty if there's earnings above the $500, and the penalty would be only on the earnings above the $500, which in today's environment, he may very well not have any earnings. So from a tax perspective, he might avoid all taxes and penalties if that $500 has stayed the same or shrunk.
It's the 6% penalty he avoids.
Right.
If he takes the money out before October 15th, listener, you don't have to pay the 6% excess contribution penalty that you will owe. If you do not undo this before October 15th of this year,
right,
you will owe a 6% excess contribution penalty every year that you leave that excess contribution in the IRA. So remove that before October 15th. You will save the 6% penalty. I knew there was a penalty he would avoid if he did it before October 15th.
Yes, absolutely.
It's the 6% penalty. The 10% penalty is only going to be assessed if you are withdrawing anything above what you put in. Because remember, you have to withdraw the amount you put in plus any earnings minus any losses. So you have to, with essentially, if you only put $500 in each Roth, you have to essentially close the Roths. The key, tell your custodian, don't just call them. This is probably the biggest mistake people make, Chris and Bob. They just call the custodian and say, close it. I got to take the money out.
Send me the $500, yeah. Exactly.
And they will code that, listeners, as a distribution.
Which isn't, in this case, because it was a Roth, you can take the back, you know, but the IRS is going to still think that you've got an excess contribution in there.
Exactly.
Because they didn't get the paperwork undoing the contribution. So you'll, a few years from now, get this mysterious letter that says, oh, you made a contribution back in 2019. You weren't allowed to, and it's now 2021 or 2022, and you owe us. You never notified us that you undid it, so you owe us 6% of that for the past 3 years or whatever. You can avoid all that by making sure it's coded correctly and you handle it as a removal of an excess contribution. As long as that happens, then you'll avoid any kind of future bad, uncomfortable letters from the IRS.
Anything you want to add on this, Bob?
The only thing I would add is the custodian is going to issue you a 1099 next January, and they will sometimes not show your basis on the 1099. Your basis is your $500 that you contributed. So I've seen those come through, right or wrong, and they'll show, let's just say, for example, it did make interest, so it's $510 in there. And so it'll show $510 in box one, box two will be blank, and then it'll say tax not determined. Check that box will be checked. So if you see that come through that way, make sure that you give yourself credit on your return for the $500, and so that you're only going to be taxed and penalized on the $10.
Exactly. That's a very good point from a tax perspective, listener. Just make sure you record all this correctly when you're doing your taxes in early 2021, when all this has to be done. Now, if there's any gain, and here's where I always forget, so my head is spinning a little and I'm going down a rabbit hole I probably shouldn't. I can't remember off the top of my head. If there's gain, it's taxable in the year he withdrew it, 2020, or is it taxable on his 2019 taxes, the year he made the contribution?
Taxable in the year that the excess contribution is taken out.
Yep, I agree.
Okay. So it'll be taxable to him in 2020.
Yep.
But again, listener, having no income except for your unemployment benefits, you probably have very little taxes that you owe.
Well, hopefully now in 2020 he's got money coming in again when it's startup and everything. So
yeah,
we don't know in 2020, but it's going to be on two $500 deposits over just a few months. It's going to be a small amount almost for sure, even if there's a gain at all.
If a gain at all.
I think it's highly
likely
it's lower, but even if there's a gain at all, it's going to be small most likely, like Bob is mentioning, $10 or who knows what. Because the fact that, the chances that he picked a huge winner over the past few months during the market decline, I guess if that happened, we need to find out what method he used so we can have him replicate that for us all in all of our portfolios. So.
Okay. Chris, how are we doing on time?
That'll have to do it unless we want to come back tomorrow and record another question to add on here. We could certainly do that if you have time, but otherwise we need to wrap it up for today.
Okay, well, we'll wrap up for today. And listeners, if there are more questions, we decided to do more recording later on in the week. If there's no more questions, I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode, and Chris is going to wrap up. But we will figure out tomorrow or Friday if we have a chance to add some more to this. Okay, yeah. Chris?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks to both of you. Have a nice afternoon.
Okay. See ya.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
So I do want to mimic or parrot what Jim said. We want to thank everybody for listening once again. Thanks for putting up with the audio as we have call-ins to put this all together for the next several weeks, it sounds like. Not too distant future, we'll return to normal and everybody will be in the studio, get a little better voice quality for everybody. But if you have any questions you'd like to submit to us, the best way to do that is go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. And on there, there's a contact form you can fill out to contact us for any number of things. But the main thing for this show's purposes is to send us in a question. And as you have heard, we always protect your anonymity. And So we don't mind if you put your own real name in that question. We will not divulge it. We do like to share with the state that you're coming from, so hopefully that won't be divulging too much about you. But that's the extent of us revealing anything about you, anything else that might be personally identifiable. Even if you put it in the email or the submission, we will rip out of there. So that's about all I have to say. So we appreciate everybody listening, and we'll be back next week with a brand new show. Take care of yourself, and everyone stay safe.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.